ideas into reality. She mentors aspiring entrepreneurs and is the author of the book Navigating the Future, AI, and the New Era of Product Management. I'm so excited to have her today to explore her journey from IT to product leadership and beyond, while also diving into what's really happening in the world of AI and how AI is not just changing industries, but also shaping belief systems. And most importantly, how can we all stay sane through it? With so much rapid change, how do we stay grounded, adaptable, and in control of our own narrative? So let's get to it. Welcome to the show, Amritpal Kaur Lote. Hi.
Hi, Shita. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I think it's great to kind of share each other's ideas and have a conversation about this ever-changing landscape that all of us are facing. Every generation is, trying to keep up with things. So yeah, I'm excited to get into a bit more detail about this.
I am stoked. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And it's a second one. And I'm really excited about having this conversation with you today.
Me too.
Great. So how do we start? Shall we start about how you started your career in IT? And back in the day, it was all a very male-dominated industry. So yeah, tell me
Yeah.
about it.
Sure. So I never had plans, firstly, to join the tech world in any shape or form. In fact, when you're at school and educating, nobody really steers you in the direction of the tech, side of things. So I never had any guidance or kind of push into this direction. So I actually graduated as an economist. And after graduating, I was like, right, what next? So I was working at a local council at the time. It was great because, I was first starting my career out and I was making a little bit of money, but I felt there was something missing. It's not where I want to be. I was a little bit more ambitious, and so I wanted to do something a bit more exciting. And that led me into the world of teaching. Don't ask me why, how, what, but anyway, I ended up teaching teenagers, and I think that kind of gave me an insight into a world that was rewarding, but at the same time very challenging and difficult, and also showed me that actually this is not where I want to be. So I then had the opportunity to work in accounting. No offense to any accountants, but I hated it. So after this, I was applying for jobs, and I got an invitation for an interview for an IT job. And I thought, okay, all the places I've worked, whether it's a council or in the accounting firm, people used to come to me and ask me questions about how to navigate different things on the computer and help them out with things, only because I was sort of recently graduated, so they assumed I knew more than they did, which I was happy to help them. I'm a quick learner and I like to solve problems. So I thought, okay, I've never thought about the tech world and nobody's ever mentioned this. I didn't even think it was an opportunity for me, but I was very intrigued. So I went along to this interview. And it was actually it was a set of IT courses, and then with a guaranteed job at the end. So it wasn't exactly a job, but I thought this sounds really exciting, and it's an area that I don't know about, but I'm keen to understand and learn. So I signed up for the course, and it cost me a lot of money. I did change my mind after a few days, but at that time I was already in a contract and I couldn't get my money back. So I had a choice. I either lose all the money I'd paid, or I just go ahead with this and see where I end up. So I did a few of the exams. I started off sort of like just doing the time, I think it's still called the A plus, and then there was a networking side. So learning about the physical elements of computers, how you put them together, and then also the software side. Then moved into the networking, and at the time I think it was Windows 2003. So 2003, yeah. So I learned from that side as well. But I thought, okay, if I carry on doing all this learning, it's going to be at least over a year before I even get the guaranteed job kicking in. So I wanted to put some of this theory into practice. So I started applying for my own IT jobs, and I landed my first job with Western Union. It's a foreign exchange company. I'm sure many have heard of it. And I've never looked back ever since. So I was just like, I have landed exactly where I want to be. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing because I love the problem solving side of things. And so it was like anytime somebody had an issue with something, I was like, right, I'll investigate and I'll fix this. And I really found like, okay, this is where I want to be in life. So yeah, so my tech career kind of took off from there. So I was there for 8 years and then moved. And by the time I'd sort of finished there, I'd moved into leading the entire tech team. So yeah, that kind of moved me into the world of management from there.
Amazing. And how was it being a woman in IT?
So it was quite daunting, but what gave me the encouragement was that when I was interviewed for this role, it was actually the head of IT was a woman. Surprising. The entire team was male dominated, but the head was a woman. And I just thought, wow, okay, this is great. And she really encouraged me to, you know, get involved in different things. In fact, 6 months into joining Western Union, one of the guys who was heading up the telecom side of things left. And she immediately said to me, Amrit, you're going to be looking after the telecom side. So I really had to like dive in the deep end here. And yeah, and she gave me the opportunities I wanted. I'm not sure how my male counterparts felt about that, but I certainly didn't look back and I didn't think twice about it. I was like, I'm getting to learn more. This is really exciting. And yeah, just see where this takes me. But it was really encouraging that there was a woman who interviewed me and she was heading up the team. So it gave me hope that actually there is space for women.
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, nobody made me feel uncomfortable. Everyone was actually out there to help. So all the guys I was working with were very helpful. And that kind of encouraged me to stay. Had that been a different experience, I could probably be in a different industry today.
Yeah, no, I suppose, you know, and this is my belief that if women stick together and we kind of support each other, we can change the world, I feel. Because even in the law industry, my managers or my seniors were female lawyers. And they actually helped me like buckle up. And they're so professional. I'm not saying male aren't, but I just find that women just get things done.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't always roses. You know, there were some, and I think a lot of that was down to my own imposter syndrome or self-confidence, because it was an industry that, although I'd done a few exams in and I'd got some experience in, I was still starting out in a very unknown environment. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was like, okay, I'm the different one here. How am I going to, because I'm not at that leadership level where I've got the authority and people will take me seriously. But at the same time, like you do feel like an outsider in some conversations. Like, do I know enough? Should I say this or will I sound stupid? Do I actually know what I'm talking about? And then when somebody else says the exact same thing and you're like, oh, so I could have spoken up. So yeah, so it was kind of like having to prove yourself a little bit more in this male dominated environment. And I think I learned a lot from that. Definitely made me more resilient.
Cool. So what would be your advice to say someone who belongs to Gen Z and Gen Alpha, kids are growing up, because these days the industries are evolving and shifting. It's not the traditional jobs that we used to have, accounting, law, software engineer. There are a lot of coders, like kids are being taught coding in schools and colleges. So what would your piece of advice would be for a Gen Z who wants to kind of follow your path, for instance?
Yeah, I think the path is already changing. So I think I'll probably start off by saying that it's making me more worried about where I am today, because there are people half my age or younger who are absolutely brilliant at coding, who really understand, who've had the opportunity to educate in this field right from the get-go. If you look at the kids that are in primary school now, they're coding, they're doing everything digitally, you know, whether it's their homework, they're submitting it digitally, whether it's their parents who are trying to help them with things or contact the schools, it's all digital. And so the whole landscape has changed now, very different from when I started. Like I said, nobody encouraged me to move into the world of tech. In fact, it was almost like, no, that's a male thing. The guys will do the tech side of thing. The girls can do other things. So now that's changing. I met a friend recently and her son, I think, was 9. And she was showing me a mobile game he'd built. And I was like, wow. That's like impressive. Now, at 9 years old, he's building a mobile game. If I had to build a mobile game today, I would know probably where to start, but I don't think I'd be able to complete it to the level he did. So things are changing, and I encourage youngsters of today to really follow that path, because that's where the new landscape is. Everything is becoming digital. As you know, from 2023, AI really took off. Like, it became something that everyone in most households was like getting familiar with. It's now in their hands, you know, take ChatGPT. And then you can see, like, more recently in current times, there's Chinese companies who've launched their own AI platforms and stuff for half the cost and much faster. So things are changing rapidly. So now building a game is something I could probably just type a line into one of these platforms and it will build it for me. I actually don't need to have the deep knowledge of coding to do this. So it's all changing. And I think that's what the next generation have to really be on top of. It's like, how can they use the changing landscape in tech to really flourish their careers, whether it's some businesses or ideas they've got that they want to launch? I think we're going to start seeing much, much younger entrepreneurs appearing. Very different from today, while I was graduating and starting my career out. So, yeah, and now I'm competing with 9-year-olds.
Yes. So you've transitioned into, obviously, you're an entrepreneur. You've started and built several businesses. And I know all the interactions I've had with you, most of them, like, I've got an idea. I need to write it down. I need to build this thing. So, and it's really exciting to see you do that. So when you moved to product tech, you've written a book about it. I want you to tell us a bit more about the book, and also how important do founders need to incorporate tech into their businesses? What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. So I think there were a couple of questions in that. So, I mean, I guess the transition from tech to product, it came quite smooth. So it was, tech is more like how to keep current products running, maintaining them and improving them iteratively. But then product is really deciding what to build. So as you said, yeah, I always have different ideas. So as I'm navigating through life and I'm like, oh, this is missing. Oh, is there something out there already? No, there isn't. Actually, can I build this? And then it's like, yeah, I go down that path. Like, okay, if I had to build this, what would I do? Where would I start? How easy or difficult would it be for me to do? A lot of tech is commoditized now, so it's easier to navigate this world, especially if you have ideas. There's a lot of off-the-shelf products you can sort of put together in a modular fashion, and you'll be able to launch something pretty quickly. And so really getting into the strategy of the products that are being built, working with different teams very closely to understand the people, the business, the strategy, and the tech, that kind of helped me land in that product space. And I loved it because rather than just being not isolated, but sort of just being part of a tech team, I was now part of the entire business because it was about the product we're launching or the products or services that are being launched, and really understanding what we're building, why we're building it, and making sure that there's a real need for it in the market. So this led me into areas like health tech, which is very prominent at this point, fintech as well, so all your financial technology from like digital banking. So there's it's opened up so many doors in that world because now there's so many new and exciting products that are yet being built, but also you can see how they're changing entire industries. Like with health, I've recently had an issue with my health and I went to the doctors and they were trying to guess what it was. Eventually, they diagnosed me and I was treated for it. After my treatment, I actually thought, now that I've been through that journey, let me go to something like ChatGPT and see if it can diagnose me just based on my symptoms if I enter them into the platform. And surprisingly, the very first thing that came up was the actual diagnosis that my doctor had done. And I got this within seconds. So you can just see now would I, next time I have a problem, do you think I'm going to pick up the phone to my doctor, or do you think I'm going to go to ChatGPT to see if I can figure out what it is? I know we were able to do this with Google, and doctors really don't like it when we Google something and then go to them and say, well, Google said X, Y, Z. But now it's like, actually, you know, these AI platforms are really, really getting better and better at understanding problems, and they can look at things from a big scale within seconds. So you're likely, and I'm not saying that they are correct, not undermining any doctors in any way, but I do feel that the way we do things is now changing. They've got clinics in a box, so you can go in and it's just run by AI, where you can just be examined, get a full body examination, and it will tell you about your, you know, your vitals, what's missing, your bloods, all of that kind of stuff. And it gives you an entire full diagnosis of what's going on, which I think is required. So AI is changing things, the way we do banking, the way we move money, the way we invest, all of that is changing. And I think it's a great thing. And that's why I love being in the product world, because you really get to see these products come to life and get to shape them along the way as well. So yeah, so I mean, understanding business, customers, tech all in one space kind of led me into this product world. And I love the challenge as well.
That's incredible. And like you said, all these industries are changing. And I feel even the education system is changing. There won't be teachers anymore. It's all going to be robots teaching, because there's already a school in the UK that's doing it. And I don't think we're far from AI already coming into our lives and kind of, well, I don't like it, like them dominating us. But do you think that'll be a scenario in the future where we'll be dominated by AI?
Yeah, I think we are heading in that direction. And I do feel that every single industry is going to be impacted. I know we've had this conversation before about law and the legal world and how AI is impacting that. But I think what people need to understand, and probably don't want to grasp this just yet, but AI is moving faster than ever. It's going to change things very, very rapidly. So where people think we've got 10 years before we see things, it's definitely not 10 years anymore. I'm talking about, like, you know, 1/10 of that time. You're going to see rapid changes. And like you mentioned, the education system, children are going to be learning from AI teachers. And as you know, when ChatGPT first launched, the classrooms and universities and everyone just went crazy, because now people are submitting homework and essays using ChatGPT. And then, you know, the legal consequences as well. Like, if I'm using ChatGPT to do my research or write things for me, where is it getting this information from? Am I infringing copyright? There are, I think the delay around AI is going to be around the regulatory side, the compliance side, the legal side, because I don't think they can move as fast as the way technology is moving. So that's going to be a massive challenge, and that might slow things down slightly. But I think, as we can see now, those areas are having to play catch up with tech.
Yeah.
And it's moving faster than ever.
Yeah, that's always the case with legal. I think policy always tries to catch up with innovation and the new advancements in technology. But I think Europe is the front runner when it comes to GDPR and all. They are the first to legislate. They've already legislated on AI, and other countries are still deciding on policy. So that's always the case with law.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I've worked in the Middle East as well, and they look to Europe to see what the policies are there first. So I think Europe does all of the testing. They're the testing ground. And then once they've got it right, that's when the rest of the world kind of look to Europe and say, okay, they've done this, we just copy and paste it now for our regions.
Yeah,
it's always playing catch up. And it always will, because it's just moving too rapidly. And you probably know, in like the legal field, I think Sprint Law is using AI as well. So you're triaging your first set of customers just using AI to start with. And that's going to improve over time. And then it will be like, well, what happens to everyone's jobs in the company?
I actually asked my co-founder that question. I was like, are you trying to make us redundant? The answer is no. He also believes that's going to take a while for kind of.
Do you think it's impacted the hiring, though? Like, would they be more reluctant to hire now because they're training up these AI models? to learn like humans. And a lot of legal stuff is referencing cases in the past. And if these cases are available, whether it's internally to your organization or externally public cases, it's learning rapidly and can probably respond much quicker. So, yeah, I wonder if it's impacting the hiring scenario at Sprintel.
Not at this stage. It's still learning, and I think it's not very accurate because I've used ChatGPT, I've used Gemini, I've used our own bot as well. It gives you the answer. It knows like a basic thing, but if you need a more of an expert advice, then you still need to speak to a proper lawyer, right? A human lawyer, I would say. It will catch up. So I think there's a book called Tomorrow's Lawyers, and it kind of tells you that unless you are specialized in your field, like if you're a data analyst or specifically you are consuming due diligence documents, or if you're your industry, so if you're in competition, any industry to do with like GDPR, like you're an expert in that, or if you're a transaction lawyer, expert there, and host of other industries, right? Then you will survive. But otherwise, it's going to wipe out that lower layer.
Yeah. I think we're in a world today where there's no guarantee, especially when it comes to jobs. I think the landscape is changing. Like we know, you know, if we just look at influencers, for example, you've got kids who are producing content and becoming millionaires just by doing very simple tasks or daily tasks. And they've got a huge audience watching them, whether it's eating food, whether it's unpacking boxes, and they're making their millions. And then there's the rest of us who have sort of really worked hard in our education careers and tried to build something for us, and we struggle to get to that level. So it's almost like we're having to play catch up.
Yeah.
And it is changing. So jobs are very different now. It wasn't, you know, before, like the generation, my parents' generation, if they got a job in a company, they would stay there until, you know, retirement. They'd be there for 25, 30 years, and it was normal. But now, my generation, I've noticed, kind of move jobs every few years because they want something different. They want to learn more. They want new challenges. And not just in the same industry. They're jumping from industry to industry.
Yeah.
You know? And it's becoming, it's changing rapidly. And I think AI is having a huge impact. Like over the last 2 years, just the job market has been absolutely crazy. So one, there's been a lot of layoffs from companies. So there's a lot more people in the market looking for work. And again, those things are due to AI, that technology taking over. Now we don't need as many humans. It's cheaper, it's faster to run a machine than it is to hire a human. And there's no like production loss or anything unless obviously a system goes down. But again, compared to humans, businesses who are just thinking about, you know, profit and loss statements or their bottom line, it's about money. And if they can make savings by swapping a human out with technology, that's what they'll do. And that's business. But unfortunately, that leaves a huge market of people out there looking for work. And now when you're applying for a job, it's been out for less than an hour and you've had hundreds of applicants because there's so many people looking for work right now. And so now everyone's competing with each other and the jobs aren't coming out as fast as, you know, they need to in order to, you know, help many people out. But it's just the way things are changing.
It's scary to see the disruption. Like you mentioned, these influencers, they've disrupted the traditional way of working on the traditional job landscape.
Yeah, sorry.
And I want to know, which side of AI are you on? Does it scare you? You are in the tech industry, right? And you are creating these products and you know about these issues. And there is this whole aspect of anxiety, stress in people because they have this fear that how are they going to kind of make ends meet? Right. So I want to know, where are you with AI? What's your view?
Okay. I'm pro AI, but I just want to caveat that with I'm pro responsible AI.
Right.
Because with any technology, it can be misused. But if we look at the benefit side of it, I think, like I gave the example of my health, if I can get diagnosed that quickly within seconds, and I'm not saying that, you know, it's accurate, but it's given me a direction to follow, and I'm more likely to use that path again the next time I have any kind of issue, it's benefiting me. Yes, it doesn't help my doctor because I'm coming with my own diagnosis before I see my doctor. And I'm still seeing my doctor at this stage, you know, just to make sure that I get through the right channels if I need to be hospitalized, etc. But just the starting point is changing. So I would rather look at AI to diagnose me today than speak to my doctor, because I can't get an appointment with my doctor right now for at least a week, if not longer. And I want answers today because I've got the problem today. And yeah. So if we use it in the right way, if it's going to speed up things like helping patients, there's going to be less deaths in the future because we're able to diagnose. We're able to, as you know, there's surgery being done by robots now. So we're not relying on a surgeon who's been working a 12-hour day, who's exhausted and then has to begin another day again, just like that. The room for error is minimized. All of that kind of stuff, I think, is absolutely brilliant and is going to change lives for the better. Even from a finance perspective, the fact that we can see what our personal finance management is, how we're spending 1 month to the other and a comparison between the two, all of that kind of stuff is going to help us, because we don't, like, it will avoid us ending up in, you know, huge debts in life and all of that, because we're learning. So that the literacy side of it is brilliant. And I think everyone should know how they're spending money. And a lot of people get scared to look at the figures or dive deeper into what's happening, because, you know, they just feel like it's an ever-growing mountain and they just don't know how to fix this. But those kind of products will start to help and educate people.
Yeah.
So I think there's those kind of areas are brilliant. Even education, getting access to information that you would not have had access to before, you know, whether you'd have to sit in a library and search through hundreds of books before you got that content, is now available in seconds using an AI platform. So that's changing things rapidly. The problem we're going to have is that there are going to be people who are going to misuse this. So whether there's misinformation that's spread, we won't know the difference.
Yeah.
As you know, like, if you go onto any of the social media platforms today, they're using algorithms in the background to show you content. So if you click on content that is about, I don't know, say you're having a baby and you start looking at content about pregnancy or babies, and all of a sudden you'll start to get more and more adverts and more content on your feed about this particular subject. There's been a case in the past where the reason we have to opt in and opt out of, you know, consenting these kind of things now is because there was an example of a lady who was doing exactly this. She was having a baby, she was searching this content, and then miscarried. And so, but she was still being shown the same content because the algorithm wouldn't know that. So she's constantly getting shown ads for baby products or videos about babies, and this really affected her mental health. So there was a case and all sorts of things came out from that case where, yeah, actually now you have to consent whether you want your data to be shared, et cetera, and be able to remove yourself from that should you need to.
Yes.
So there are things that we're learning as we're going along, but there are going to be things where we don't know if the propaganda that we see, is it something that somebody's instigated manually to feed this into the world? Do we know what we're really consuming? Is it accurate information? If I think about my parents, like, they're sending me videos about health stuff all the time. How do we know that these people are genuinely educated in this space, who are giving genuine advice that things won't go wrong if you start following these areas? How do you, because they become influencers, but influencers are by a number of people that follow you or like or engage with your content. But they have bots to do that too. So how do you know that somebody's saying to you, okay, if you've got a heart issue, take this vitamin and it will fix it? But how do you know that that's the correct information, firstly? How do you know that's not going to have an impact on you? And also, you might be taking other medication stuff where it might counteract and all the rest. So it's just so difficult. But it's the kind of information we're consuming. So I just feel like I am pro AI. I think it's going to do some really amazing things and make our lives better in ways. But I feel from a mental health perspective, it could have an impact because, like I said, we're not going to know whether what we're consuming is correct. We're not going to know what to follow. There's going to be so much information overload people are going to start burning out and switching off. And that's my worry.
Yeah, I think it's already there. People are mindlessly scrolling. And then I see a lot of people around me, they are either depressed or super anxious. So there are issues already there. And which is why I wrote The Inner Circuit, is because I want people to know that you are enough. You just need to take control of your mind, your emotions, understand how it works, and then deal with situations objectively. So, yeah, and also not just that aspect. I think that it's impacting their confidence in the sense that people have started to compare themselves with other people, constantly posting stories and reels and all of that. So it there is a competition. You have your actual lives in the background, and then you have a life on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, chat or whatever. And people are constantly comparing and getting anxious about, oh, they need to catch up, right? There's FOMO about this. What's next? I need to post. I'm eating. I'm posting something. I'm going somewhere. I'm posting something. It's fun. Yeah, you want to share information. Cool. But you don't have that constant need to keep posting. Research has shown that there is a dopamine kick, right? By posting and getting that validation, those likes and those comments. It's impacting people, and people are starting to realize that. So you've started a project with confidence, right? Inner and outer. Mm-hmm. So tell us more about that. And I also want to know, you know, that, okay, let's talk about that first.
Sure. So I think when it comes to confidence, just on that point, AI can boost confidence because it can enhance your like productivity. Like you can do things faster. Like I find a lot of the people I'm speaking to now, entrepreneurs that I'm helping out from a product perspective, I can do things in hours versus weeks and months. So it's really given me that confidence. When somebody asks me a question and they need some document, I can knock that out so quickly now. So that gives me confidence because when they read these documents, they're like, wow, how did you do this so fast? But so that it can boost your confidence, but also it can create like unrealistic expectations. So like, oh, I have to always have the perfect filter on. I have to always look good. And no one can see my flaws. Or if it's job hunting, for example, my CV has to be perfect. There's all these expectations that people are putting on themselves, or everyone's posting, so I need to post something. By the way, I tried this, not on a personal level, but on a professional level, that I'm going to get onto this because I need the algorithms to work. You know, I need to start boosting my business. And so from that perspective, but I couldn't keep up with it. Like, I know there's AI tools out there that can now manage your schedules and create posts for you and all the rest, and which I think is brilliant because that will boost productivity again for me and give me that confidence. But at the same time, the time I was spending trying to create these posts and try and keep up that I got to post every day or at certain times of the day, and it was just getting too much. I was getting overwhelmed by that. So I was then thinking, okay, I can't push my business because I don't have time to do that. I could have hired an agency or a person to do this for me, 100% yes. But I tried to do it myself first, and I was just like, okay, this is a full-time job in itself. With the confidence side of the business, so yes, me and my sister started a company called The Confidence 360. And the idea of this is she works in NHS and mental health and has done for the last 10 years. And I've done a lot of work in fashion and also from an image consultant perspective. So I'm qualified from there. And I was just saying to her that I think we need to bring these two worlds together. We need to look at humans holistically. There is an outer side to humans. There is an inner side to humans. And we need to look at that as a whole. And sometimes that outer can affect our confidence. And sometimes that inner affects our confidence. And this could be in all areas of your life. So if you look at the wheel of life, or your health, your career, your finances, your relationships, your mental health, all of that kind of encompasses as one in a human. So how can we help boost people's confidence inside and out, not look at them separately, but kind of bring that together? And so that's how Confidence 360 came about. And it was also based on like programs I used to watch when I was a kid, when I used to see these like transformations of people and the confidence it gave them, like how they used to light up when they used to see this new version of themselves. So although that was focused on the outer side, but it just made me feel so happy that I could see how happy that person and how confident they had become. So for me, it was like, we need to bring this back. So rather than just watching reality TV now and watching all these celebrities sort of and their lives, I think it's really important to actually see transformations and how people can work on themselves to make themselves better. Yes, there will be some kind of AI involvement in this product as well. Because how can we help people faster? The kind of questions we need to ask them, the kind of the packages we need to create for them. How can we use AI to help us do these things? How can we look at somebody's body and analyze them from a health perspective or a confidence perspective or a physical perspective, anything? There's so many things you can use AI for, but we want to keep the human element there as much as we can too. We don't want it to be about a computer's making all the decisions for you, because we feel right now we can't personalize these as much as we'd like to. But I'm not saying in the future that won't change, because as AI evolves, it might be something we'd have to consider as well to stay and keep up with the market too.
Yeah, I think as humans, it's kind of an evolution for us as well, because all our lives, since the time we've been born, we've been around humans. Like me as a millennial, I had computers, desktops at that time, and now we have laptops and mobile phones. So we have technology around us, but we're not used to having like robots, moving robots around us. So it's like another person, artificial, but another person. So yeah, I mean, it's forward. I think we humans will need to evolve from this, and we will.
Yeah, definitely. And just speaking about robots, I mean, come on, I want a robot to cook for me. You know, cooking is something I don't enjoy.
Yeah.
So if I had a robot that cooked my meals for me and made me like, you know, healthy, nutritious meals, so I'm not reaching for the, you know, the first bit of junk I can find. Oh, brilliant. That's going to help me. And that's going to hopefully improve my health and well-being too. So there are benefits to having robots. If I can get some time back and have a robot clean my home for me, like, of course, I would use that. But also, if you think about like the aging population who are living on their own, if they had companions as robots, just to somebody to, you know, a robot to talk to and get responses as if they're talking to a real human that they might not have access to right now, I think it can really help their mental health as well. So they're not sort of sat just thinking in their own minds and building pictures for themselves. But actually having conversations with a robot that is using artificial intelligence in the background, understands who they're talking to, understands everything about them, their needs and requirements, and then tailors their responses to that person so it's valid for them and personalized to them. I think this is going to help so many people in so many ways. But yes, it's going to make us lazier as a generation too. We're probably going to become less creative because we're going to have these robots doing things for us. So yeah, I think as long as we're using AI as a tool and not replacing our creativity, which I think humans are on this planet because they are so creative, I think that's where we kind of have to make that distinction.
I really love your point of view, because you're saying we need to use AI responsibly. It needs to be used as a tool only and not overpower our creativity, our day-to-day lives, in the sense that already experiencing, just sitting all the time, right? It's like smoking. You have to move about. You have to exercise to be healthy.
Imagine being a robot personal trainer.
Yeah, like, but you're doing hard work. So
but as in like somebody personally training you in your own home and all of that kind of stuff, like how brilliant would that be? I mean, I wouldn't have to think about gym memberships. I wouldn't have to think about what time I'm going to be training and all that kind of stuff. There's going to be somebody probably motivating me and pushing me in the background to actually get healthier. But again, it's what I program into this robot to do, if that makes sense. So if my mindset is not there, I won't be able to program a robot to do that. So yes, I have to take responsibility, which is why I'm saying, like, You have to be creative and responsible, but you can't, you've got to use it as a tool, but not let it replace you, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Inevitably, it will be replacing people like a personal trainer, a human personal trainer, or gym membership. Somebody started that business. So it's going to replace a lot of industries, a lot of jobs. Yeah.
I saw something recently where it was replacing like the police force as well. And it was able to do flying kicks and all the rest. So from a martial arts perspective too, like they're getting more and more enhanced. And there is a danger to that as well, because if they go become smarter than humans, then they will inevitably be taking over in terms of which direction we go in, and probably making us question our self-worth at some stage.
Yeah, that's my worry. And that's why I need people kind of take the reins in their own hands and start from now, because like you said, it's not going to be in the next 10 years. It's going to be sooner. So you have to brace yourself for all those challenges.
Yeah, it's going to change everything. And I think we just need to remember that right now, I'm not thinking for the future, right now, AI lacks consciousness. So, you know, true originality, it lacks that. But that's not to say in the future, it won't mimic this in some way. So we just have to be mindful of that.
That's insane. Okay, I know the topic of AI is really broad and we could go on and on, but I want to talk about confidence. I feel like people these days, because of the competition around them, there is an element of low self-esteem, low confidence, and constant comparison with others. Once someone told me, and we were there, that discussion, that your grandma didn't let you study when you were younger. So tell me about that. I want to know, were you always confident, or is it something that someone can kind of, they say, fake it till you make it. So what are your thoughts on building confidence?
Okay, so with regards to my grandmother, yes, she definitely did do that. So I'd finished my GCSEs and I was trying to look for colleges and also talking about what I'm going to study going forward. And she said to me, you don't need to study anymore. That's enough. Women don't study more than this. And you need to start thinking about your future. And my future meant marriage and kids. For her, it was like, yeah, you've done your education bit. That's done. That's a tick in the box. Now let's try and find you a husband. So I think that made me want to educate more.
The rebellion.
Exactly. Because I was like, right, she wants me to get married. Now, come on. We finish our GCSEs at 16. Who is thinking about marriage at that age? Not anybody that I know. So my thing was, okay, so she wants me to stop my education so I can find a husband. But if I keep educating, I don't need to find a husband yet. So I was more determined than ever to go to the next stage and say, right, I'm doing my A-levels. So yeah, I did my A-levels. And again, at the end of my A-levels, she was like, you don't need to study anymore. That's enough. But I was like, no. And again, like she was like, look, none of the women in the family, just take a look around you. They've all just, they are working, but they didn't go to like universities and things like that. So you don't need to go to university. And I was like, no. If it means I don't have to get married yet, I'm going to university. Okay. So it kind of pushed me into this direction of actually educating and actually going to get my degree. So in a way, I'm glad she did that. But it also showed me that I wanted to be responsible for my own decisions. I do know that obviously, being Indian and coming from an Indian family, there are pressures around, you know, getting married by certain ages. And at the time, I was probably the one breaking all of those boundaries in some way, because I actually didn't end up getting married until I was 30. And that was unheard of at that time. The amount of things I had to hear did knock my confidence a little bit, because it was like, you should have been married by now. You should have been having kids by now. Look at everyone around you. They're getting married. My younger sister got married before me. So again, that kind of made me feel like, oh, is there something wrong with me? And it wasn't that I didn't want to get married at that point. It's just I didn't find the right partner. So, and I didn't want to just get married for the sake of it. And so So a lot of people were like, no, it was almost like you're on the shelf now. You're going to have to start looking at people who are 10 years older than you, or divorced in some way or something like that. Almost like you're going to get the rejection pile in some way. And that did knock my confidence a bit, because I was like, well, actually, is there something wrong with me? So I'm now questioning myself and all those self-doubts are creeping in. But I knew that I did have a lot of strength in me. So it was like, no, actually, I can get through it all. And I am a believer of God as well. And I am destiny and fate. So I do believe that it's only going to happen at the time it's meant to happen.
Mm.
And even though it did, you know, I did get divorced a few years later. So it didn't work out. But again, I didn't let that knock my confidence because I was like, okay, that's just how it was meant to be. But that's not going to stop me from continuing living my life and doing what I need to. Although it kind of pushed me to focus more on my career at that point then. So yeah, I just kind of let life take me where it needs to. I don't see life as being linear. You just go with the flow. And I've always said that to everyone, go with the flow, because you just don't know where life's going to take you. You can plan as much as you want, but as we all know, not all of our plans work out. We can have some kind of idea of where we want to go, but destiny will play out in the end. So yeah, so I mean, from leadership perspective, I think I got those skills from when I was younger and my mom was very unwell. So she was in and out of hospital. And so I've got two siblings. And so I think I felt like I was the responsible one. Not just I felt, but I think I was also told this as well, like you have to look after your brother and sister. So I kind of just jumped into that role. And as the elder sibling, you know, I just felt like I was the one who was either going to help them and make them responsible like me, or I was going to destroy their entire future. Luckily, they didn't turn out so bad. But yeah, that kind of pushed me into that leadership and responsible role. I wouldn't say leadership. I mean, I don't tell them what to do, but it was more like making them responsible, sort of not what to think, but how to think.
Okay. And just kind of touching on the confidence part, like just coming back to that, do you think having faith in God or that energy around us is important for one to build confidence? How can one build confidence?
I think when it comes to God and confidence, now we have all sorts of people in the world who believe in something or nothing, or it's quite a contrast. And there's no rule that says that if you don't believe in God, that you're less confident. So I always look at this as when I've sort of been taught in my life, I've been taught that we are creation of God. So we're all part of the same energy. So it's like, I think I recently read that imagine God as being the ocean and we're a drop of that ocean and we merge back into the ocean at some stage. So if everyone is a creation of God, then if somebody doesn't believe in God per se, but believes in themselves, if they are a part of God, then they're believing in something and that helps them build their confidence. So I think everyone has to have something that they believe in, whether it's a person, whether it's an energy, whether it's through stories and faith that have built them to what they are today, that kind of builds their confidence. And I think also surrounding yourself with the right people definitely helps to boost your confidence too. So it's a bit of a roundabout answer, but yeah, I think anyone and everyone can have confidence. It's something that you can actually work on. So it's not something you're either built with or not. It's something you can work on in time. And there's different, as I said, in the wheel of life, sometimes you're going to be confident in certain areas of your life and not in others. Yeah. And that's okay, because you can work on some things.
Yeah.
As long as you know what it is you're focusing on or what area needs the work, you can work on it and boost your confidence from that level. But yeah, like I said, I've been a believer of God and I've had faith, and I also believe in destiny and we're predestined. So I just go with the flow and touch wood. It's worked for me up until now.
Yeah. No, it's a lovely answer. I do agree with you on that. I want to take it one step deeper and ask you, what is God? Obviously, there are believers and non-believers, but people generally sometimes ask me, you haven't seen God. How do you believe in God? So what, according to you, is God?
Wow, that's a deep question. Okay. For me, God is like the ultimate source of truth, like love, wisdom. And God is in everything. Like, if you think about nature, like, humans can't recreate nature to the degree we've inherited it. It's just, if you just think about how perfectly every single thing works in nature, I mean, it blows my mind because, like I said, it's such a deep question, but it's like, how can something be created so perfect?
Yeah.
And it can't be a human who's created it, because we call it nature for a reason. But I don't think God is a religious thing. I think it's like, it's an energy, it's a presence around you. Yeah, I mean, it's something that you have to experience.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes there's moments in your life where you can't explain how and why things have happened. Some people call it coincidence. Some people call it luck. Some people call it miracles. But actually, what is it? And that's something I'm on a journey of discovering myself.
Yeah.
But I think it starts with the truth. I think there's, you know, degrees of kindness and compassion and love. And I think that's sort of the universal answer. That makes sense. But it's something I'm still exploring. It's as my experiences grow, my understanding of this, or as the concept of God grows too.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. You've clarified that it's not religion. It's something to do with religion, right? It's omnipresent. It's universal.
Yeah.
And also, even for myself, I'm not a religious person, and I've always felt that there is this power that's always protecting me, guiding me. People might call it intuition, people might call it destiny, but I always feel that I'm being protected. If there are certain people that are not good for me, I'm just away from them. So yeah. It's just wonderful. I can't explain it, but every day I think you kind of reinforce it in yourself. They say you have to have affirmations every day. You need to be grateful for it. And you throw that energy out in the universe. So although our human mind can't comprehend that, because I think God is beyond all of that, and it's beyond this universe, there are beyond this galaxy and all of that. That God has created all of this. We can't fathom what that energy is, because I think our frequency is not.
Yeah, it's beyond the concept of me and I.
Yeah.
Whatever comes beyond that is God. It's that energy that's beyond that. And that's where it's like we get caught in the web of life. We get caught in, oh my God, that person said something to me. And we spend hours, days, months, years thinking about that conversation and letting that kind of lead us. But actually, everything is happening the way it's meant to happen. And like I said, I believe in destiny, and I believe that we're predestined. So I've got so many examples in my life where I can't explain. Like, there's no way of me explaining. There's science that can go to some degree, but science is also trying to understand and catch up as well. So it's like, we're not there yet, but it's huge. Like, it's this energy, like you said, is omnipresent. It's universal. So
amazing. I think we'll do another podcast on this. I think it's really interesting, and we are on our personal journeys to figuring out who we actually are. And I love having these conversations, people's interpretation of different things. It's amazing. It's just interesting.
I mean, it's nice because it gives you a sense of purpose. You know, it's beyond material world, beyond that material success. You know, it's not about, have I reached the highest goal in my career? Am I making my millions and all of that? It's something beyond that. And I think that whatever that is, or whatever people call that, is the thing that kind of gets you through your challenges.
Yeah.
And makes you stronger. And essentially your confidence So it boosts your confidence. So yeah, it's all linked.
Great. So now that I'm going to ask you something about your journey and in the entrepreneurial world. You've had multiple businesses and you've founded them. So as a founder, do you think everybody is meant to be a founder? Is everyone cut out to be like an entrepreneur? My view is no, not everyone can be one. You should actually assess your qualities and see whether you're fit for a job or you can actually found and run a company, because it's not an easy job. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the first answer or the simple answer would be no, not everyone is cut out to be a founder or an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a personal thing. There is no right or wrong way to some degree to success. Success for some people is, like I said, like in our parents' generation, success was being able to stay in that job for 25, 30 years and either being promoted. And even if you didn't get promoted, it was just to turn up there every day, do your bit, do your duty, and leave with that paycheck, make sure your family's supported, and all those kind of things. And now, like I said before, like now we're competing with children who essentially are becoming entrepreneurs of some sort or are making their millions faster than we could even imagine. Yeah. And that might just be by sharing a video of what they're eating on a daily basis. So success in that side comes in so many different ways, but it does not mean that everyone can become an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is almost a push because now we're coming out of, you know, jobs because we're being laid off or being made redundant in some way, shape or form. And the first thing people are thinking of is, what can I do for myself? Because there is an agenda pushing people to start creating businesses. But I think what you'll find is that not everyone's cut out because it's not an easy journey. And it depends on how resilient you really are. It's something that it's not like money is not going to be your hardest challenge when it comes to a business. There's going to be so many challenges, like your idea, how it evolves, how you are as a leader, hiring the right people, all of that kind of stuff can either make or break your business. Some people have a mindset where they need to do everything in a logical like scenario in steps. And we call this almost like working in a waterfall versus an agile way. So if you work in a waterfall, which is like the project management that most people are used to, where there is an entire plan for over a year or a few years of building a product and launching it to market, and you kind of follow that plan to a T before, and so your product's going to launch in like a year or two and it's going to be the perfect product. But as we've seen, the landscape is changing so fast that 1 or 2 years is the equivalent of nearly 10, 20 years now. So you have to work faster. And so we try and work in an agile way. It's like, don't try and build everything first. You know, launch something, the basic, the bare minimum you need, launch that to market first. Just make sure there's actual need for your product. Everyone can come up with ideas, but taking them through and executing on those ideas is a whole nother journey. And you'll find yourself, if you are really passionate about something, if you then make a business out of it, you're going to be further away from what you love doing because you're now having to manage the entire business, which means the people, the processes, the technology, everything. And if it was something you were just doing as a side hustle, you'll find you're far removed from that now. And not everyone can do that.
Yeah.
It's not something for everyone, but you have to be resilient in this business because businesses are moving rapidly right now. People are launching products faster than ever. We saw in COVID, a lot of people who lost their jobs during COVID started side hustles, whether it was coaching, whether it was, you know, some kind of side hustle they were doing and they wanted to turn that into a business. So, but not every business is successful. Like we hear in the startup world, I don't know the figures off the top of my head, but let's just say 90% is close to that figure. 90% of startups fail. And again, it's not a bad thing to fail because every failure is a lesson and you learn from that. So it just means you'll avoid making that mistake again. It is important to go through failure and go through rejection because that builds you up as a person. As long as you focus forward and not backwards, as long as you're looking for the solution rather than focusing just on the problem. And again, not everyone's mind is built that way, or they've not been taught that way, or it's just they're not comfortable with doing something like that. I know a lot of people who would rather just work for somebody and not have the headache of having to work 24 hours around the clock. When you're doing your own business, it's you're working constantly. There's no 9-to-5 in this anymore.
So
it's all dependent how it all depends on how you're built. So that's why I don't think it's for everyone. It is hard work. You have to know how to be flexible, to pivot, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's not for somebody who's got a very structured way of working or a fixed mindset.
Yeah. I agree with that, because even my dad, he's a businessman and he's been all his life. And growing up, I've always seen there are no fixed hours. There are times when he's doing really well. There are times throughout life, we've seen the ups and downs. And I think not just the founder, but their family, they all have to kind of, you know, they are of that mindset that it's okay to fail. It's okay not to always have a consistent salary or earning coming your way every month. And there will be times, tough times. So it actually teaches you a lot.
Yeah, okay. They say like that the best people or the best entrepreneurs are the ones who've been through hardships, because now they are even more resilient, they're much stronger, they've learned from their mistakes, and they're less likely to make those mistakes again. So yeah, so I would always say fail fast.
That's amazing. Okay, and if you had to kind of give your top three lessons to somebody who wants to found a business, start up, what would that be? Those three top lessons, if you were to give.
So I think resilience is key. Like for a founder, you have to have resilience. You have to know how to persevere, because ideas are going to evolve. But yeah, perseverance essentially is going to be the thing that helps you win. So I think that resilience is probably more important than having the perfect idea. So that's probably number one. Number two is that money isn't, like I said, the hardest part. It's the people. The people you're going to be hiring, the leadership within your organization, those are going to be the things that are going to make or break your business. So that's really important. And also, if you're only in it for the money, you're not going to last. Because you're going to see, like you said, there's going to be days where, you know, you're not going to be doing so great. And there's going to be days where you're going to be absolutely flourishing. But it's knowing that you're not going to be stuck in the same place all the time, so that the resilience side of it kicks in again. But if it's just about the money, you're going to panic every time the money's not there. So it's how do you overcome that and make sure you understand it is a roller coaster. It's not an easy journey. But as long as you know that the idea is solving a problem that's really out there, that should keep pushing you to do more and do better.
Amazing. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. And with this, it's the end of our conversation. I had a fabulous time and I was so looking forward to it. You know, I think we delayed it a bit as well, but I'm super, super glad that we did this today. And thank you so, so much. Right from the bottom of my heart here. I want to thank you. any last thoughts before we conclude this?
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a great discussion. Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, keep going. Life is going to be challenging. It's going to be fun. It's going to be, there's going to be all sorts of emotions that are going to come out at different parts of your life. You're going to be confident in certain areas and not in others, all at the same time. There's no perfect book that's written that says, this is the way you navigate life. But I think it's remembering that you are on a journey and your journey is unique. I mean, I'm not going to go into the depths of this conversation, but it is something that you are evolving as a person yourself. So sometimes it's easy to look at other people and think they are doing amazing compared to where you are at certain point in your life. But you've got to remember that everything happens for a reason, and you've just got to keep going. You've just got to believe that, as we know, time doesn't stand still. Things will move. So your hardships will become easier over time, and you just keep focusing forward. And that's probably my message for everyone.
Amazing. Thank you. And to our viewers, Amrit is the strongest person I know. She's been through loads and loads of challenges, and she just comes out like a phoenix. I wish you all the best, Amrit, and I think you will do wonders. Thank you, everyone, for watching. And take care.
Bye. Bye.